Well, once a month, our investigative reporter, Linda Moulton Howe, EarthFiles.com, goes roaming the countryside, the world, actually, looking for incredible stories, and she's come back with some again. And you know, normally she's on the last Thursday of every month, but because of the two holidays here in Thanksgiving and in Christmas, we're moving her up a week, and here she is. And we'll be back with her in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Linda Moulton Howe with us. And of course, she's also a noted author as a researcher. One of her books, An Alien Harvest, truly, I think, shook up this planet as far as what might be happening in forms of animal mutilations and stories like that. And Linda, you've uncovered some interesting things going on now in the Tennessee area. But before we get into that, I want to wish you and your family a great Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you, George, and happy Thanksgiving to you and the Coast family and all of our Coast listeners. You know, 2013 has definitely had an uptick in animal mutilations.
Oh, yes.
And for the first time in my professional investigations of worldwide animal mutilations, this is a first case that I know of where two infrared security cameras were focused on the pasture of the victim horse and nothing showed up on the frames. This is truly a mysterious situation. And this pasture and this horse that I'm talking about tonight were owned by Barbara and Terry McIlvain. They met and married 40 years ago. Barbara has had a career as a computer software engineer and real estate broker, while Terry has worked in medical equipment sales. In 1977, they bought a house with a six-acre pasture in Fairview, Tennessee, that's 33 miles southwest of Nashville. Terry wanted a horse to ride trails around their home, so in 1992, he bought a five-year-old gelded, which means the testicles are removed, and it was a Peruvian Paso Fino male that he named Bomber. Barbara also got a Paso Fino gelded male she calls Falderito. Paso Finos are very gentle horses famous for their smooth, natural gait that's popular for trail riding. And the two Paso Finos grew up forming close bonds with each other and with the McIlvains, who love them as family. Barbara had seen both horses alive and well at 3 p.m. on Friday, November 8th. But the next morning, only about 350 feet from their house, the McIlvains found Bomber lying on his right side, dead. One-third of Bomber's left ear had been cut off in a straight, somewhat serrated excision without blood. Two squarish patches of hide had been removed from his left and right haunches, almost as if something had held him there. The gelded penis pouch seemed intact, but there were two small, bloodless lines that punctured nearby skin, and the only red blood on the horse was a very small patch on his back. The Williamson County Sheriff's Office sent an investigator. She took many photographs that I have in tonight's Earth Files report at www.earthfiles.com in the Real X Files section. And she told the McIlvains that, quote, she had never seen a case like this before, close quote. Here now from Fairview, Tennessee, is Bomber's owner, Terry McIlvain.
Upon seeing my horse down, at first I thought maybe he was ill. And then as I got closer, I could see his mouth open, his teeth showing, the agony on his face and his tongue sticking out, the expression on Bomber's face. He was in a lot of pain. His teeth were fairly widely separated, maybe several inches, and his tongue sticking out, and his eyes just wide open. Part of one of his ears had been sheared off with a very clean blade.
Now, where was the cut on the ear?
Partway down. I'd say they cut off about one-third of the ear.
From the top down?
Yes.
And that cut, was it cleanly smooth?
Yeah, it was cleanly smooth.
No blood?
We did not detect any blood.
Was it dry to touch?
Yes.
Were there any excisions on the head?
No, we did not detect any. It was a clean cut. And then since he was on one side, there was a patch on his rump, maybe approximately 3 inches by 4 inches, that had been removed.
Where exactly was this patch removed?
Maybe about 6 inches down from the topmost part of his rump and his back, and down towards his leg.
Is this excision only hide deep?
Yes, it's only hide deep. It wasn't exposing anything below the skin.
Was it a perfect square or rectangle?
As close as they could get it to a perfect rectangle. Approximately 3 inches by 4 inches.
Did you touch the edge of that excision to see if there was any moisture?
No, I did not, but I believe the detective did. It didn't look like there was any moisture there.
What did the detective say?
The detective said they've never seen a case like this in our county. They have found other forms of abuse with dogs and cats, but never a horse or a cow. There's a lot of cattle in this county.
Can you now compare what you were looking at on the other side opposite of the first excision?
I would say they were almost identical. I wouldn't say that it was cauterized like with a laser type device, but it was just a really clean cut and fairly precise in that there's still an underlayer of hide there so that there wasn't any internal parts of the horse showing. Like a precision type instrument was used to cut that.
So that on both the left and the right side,
yes,
a 3 by 4 inch rectangle of hide only was lifted from two haunches, leaving the white lumen covering the muscles underneath.
Yes.
At the time that you were looking at it, did you look at the penis and testicle area?
No, we did not. We saw some blood on the back. We just were kind of surprised that we just did not find a whole lot of blood anywhere.
And you weren't aware of looking at any blood in the genital area?
Not until he was in the ground, and that's when...
You mean to bury him?
Yes, to bury him. And so our neighbor friend, Mark Sullivan, who's also a builder, put him down, and then all of a sudden we noticed the blood, like, kind of in the center part of his back. And then upon that, the detective apparently had examined the genital area, and that's when she asked us if we'd noticed anything unusual, and we did not, and so that's why... We stopped any dirt from being put on the horse so we could go and check him out. And that's when we noticed that there had been some damage there, but it just didn't look right.
Your horse, Bomber, was a gelding and his testicles had been removed.
Yeah, when he was very young. When horses are, after they're gelded, their penises retract all the way in, almost like a little pouch type of area.
So when you said it didn't look right, what was it that didn't look right to you?
Just the whole area around the pouch looked like it had been damaged. No sign of blood, but it was jagged in the penis area.
Did any of the investigators from the Williamson County Sheriff's Department say that they wanted to have a veterinarian examine the horse?
It had been discussed, but it would have been very costly. It was Saturday. It would be hard to get a vet on short notice. The amount of decomposure, we really had to get the horse in the ground. We've had some ongoing problems with neighbors that will sneak over the fence and braid the horse's manes. Because this has been ongoing, 2 or 3 years ago, the sheriff deputy suggested we have cameras mounted, and so I had 4 infrared night vision type cameras motion activated in various positions in the pasture to try and catch these people, and so far we haven't been able to catch anybody.
So you had cameras infrared on that area where the horse was?
We had 2 pointed in that direction. There would have been a 3rd, but that had been knocked down from a tree.
On these 2 cameras, did you have anything, flashes of light, anything that showed up?
Nothing. They must have been blocked. One of them was pointed specifically at where we found the horse, and it was approximately 75 feet away. And the motion activation is good from as far as up to 200 feet away. So they are very sensitive cameras.
Knowing that this had to have occurred between Friday night and Saturday morning when you found your horse, was there any kind of an image that was fresh from the time your wife had seen both horses alive on Friday afternoon until you're finding your horse dead Saturday morning?
There was just one image we found on a camera that was not pointed in that direction, from approximately 12:30 a.m. It appears to be a fox.
And there were no other frames with flashes of light or any anomaly?
Not for that night. There has been other times when there have been flashes of light.
Can you describe those?
Okay, I've got one right here from September 19th at 5:05 a.m., and it looked like if it was a helicopter hovering with a spotlight. And this particular light is shining down on the other horse, Falterito.
So the beam is on the other horse?
Yes, it is. And I don't remember ever seeing any on my particular horse. Maybe there was a beam shown down on Bomber, but the camera face down on the ground, it did not catch it.
What did you notice about his buddy horse on Saturday morning?
Yeah, Falterito, he was obviously freaked out, very difficult to get close to, running around, whinnying from a distance. He never got within, say, 50 feet of Bomber's body, but, you know, he kept looking at Bomber, like waiting for Bomber to get up.
Did you find any other area where it looked like there had been hoofs in struggle anywhere else but where his body was?
No, just where the body was. And we have checked over everything. And not only we, but the law enforcement, and then News Channel 5 yesterday, and then Channel 4 News this morning.
And was there anything about the hoof tracks that you found in agitation that looked like the horse might have been on its back hooves with front of its body up, going in a circle?
No, it looked like he was down on his side and fighting that way. It's like if you're lying on your side and you're kicking out, trying to get up or trying to get away from something.
That implies that Bomber was perhaps paralyzed by some force on the ground.
Could be. If this was an extraterrestrial, it would have been something that was trying to hold him in place. If it was a person, it would have had to be where they had some type of a rope or chain around perhaps his neck that hurt him so he wouldn't move.
And a chain would have left damage on the hair around the neck. Did you find anything unusual on Bomber's neck?
No.
When it comes to what law enforcement has said to me as a reporter for a long time, that the perpetrators of animal mutilations are creatures from outer space, have you and your wife confronted that issue before?
No, we believe in extraterrestrials, but we would wonder if they have been shining the lights in the pasture, why have we not seen them, or why has it not waken up our dog and had our dog start barking?
That is another one of the classic mysteries. Animal mutilations have occurred within 30 feet of the back door of a family. This was in Cripple Creek, Colorado, and they had a 9-month-old stallion in a corral only 30 feet from their bedroom window, and they slept with three large dogs in the room. And at 7 p.m., that horse was alive and well. And at 7 a.m., when they got up to go to the kitchen to start breakfast, dogs had been quiet all night long. Their horse was lying on its side in the corral 30 feet from their house with a large excision in the rear, other strange anomalies to the head, and there were no tracks around that horse, including the horse's own tracks. What happens that dogs that normally would go crazy are silent through a night?
Or why would we not hear the horse crying?
That means, I think, that there is a form of paralysis, and it may not have extended completely to the horse's legs for the whole process, but may have paralyzed the larynx that would make the sound.
That's very possible.
And George, I'm looking at two of the infrared images that he referenced. I have them in my earthfiles.com report. They are two of the most fascinating that I have ever seen, because coming in on one from the upper left, it appears to actually have density to what is emitting the light, and the light is on or near Falterito, the horse, and this was at 5:05 a.m. on September 19th, 2013. And then in October on the 12th, there is another. It is another beam coming right down where this horse is, and there is no question about this looking like some sort of technology that is projecting light on these horses that are puzzling to the owners, and ties in to so many testimonies of ranchers and law enforcement over the 30-some years that I've investigated animal mutilations around the world, where people have seen beams of light coming down from something in the sky, where they have seen either animals rise or be lowered. What is so puzzling is they have nothing in any of their infrared camera footage. He has looked through everything on the camera that they've had since 2011. These are the only two photos that would fall into the category of real anomaly, but it's Valderrito. And the horse that was found dead and mutilated is the bomber. And he doesn't find any images in which that horse was focused on. So this is really, in many ways, an extraordinary case with evidence, but the evidence still doesn't tie exactly to the perpetrator. And then what has happened just in the last few days, Terry and Barbara McIlvain are offering a $1,000 reward, as they say, quote, for information leading to the arrest, conviction, and incarceration of whoever killed Bomber. And they leave it open to the fact that it may be something that is non-terrestrial.
That's right.
But if it is terrestrial, they're hoping that somebody might have information and could get in touch with the Williamson County Sheriff's Department. And that phone number is 615-790-5560. And Terry McIlvain's phone number is at earthfiles.com. And I'll give it here. His number is 615-799-1930. There is more contact information in the Earth Files report. And tonight, Terry McIlvain had a meeting with some people in his Tennessee town to talk about the loss of Bomber. And he wrote this to me to share with the Earth Files and Coast audience. Quote, "This afternoon, I planted an 8-foot-tall redbud tree next to Bomber's grave so he will always have shade. The tree was donated by Taylor Nursery in McMinnville, Tennessee. When they learned about Bomber's fate, and they contacted to volunteer the tree. I can never hug my horse and family member ever again. I cannot watch him enjoying his life in our pasture because someone or something took his life. If this was an extraterrestrial, there is not much that we can do. If it's a person, then we need to find out whom and have them removed from society. Studies conclude that the majority of animal abusers will hurt another human being sometime in the future. So to all of you listening who own a pet, hug them every day because their life could be taken at any time, and there will be no more hugs." Close quote. Terry McIlvain.
Great segment. Linda, we're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back with more. More mysteries continue. This regarding Earth changes, of course. What is going on in Minnesota, the northeast part of the country, Canada? Something strange is happening to animals there as well. Linda's on top of that story, and we'll be back with this report in just a moment, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And, of course, this being the 50th anniversary week of the assassination of John F. Kennedy, at Beyond Belief, we interviewed Dr. Jerome Corsi with his book, and you get an opportunity to see that program absolutely free. Simply go to this website, beyondbelief.com. It is this week. And, of course, you'll be able to look at it anytime you want thereafter. But you have 10 days free, so take advantage of it, beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast Now, a special series of two parts here coming up this half hour and next half hour with Linda Moulton Howe. This has to do, of course, with the what's happening in the environment, whether you believe it's man-made or environmental. It doesn't matter. Something's happening.
Right, and there definitely is a lot of data that the planet is warming and that everything from the extreme typhoon and Sandy and the multiple F4s in the Midwest all at the same time that has never occurred in November before are all related to the idea that as the temperature goes up in the oceans, which in the Philippines, they were measuring 85 degrees Fahrenheit water. That is supposed to be as hot as ocean water can get. And when you have hot water and hot air, it can absorb and maintain a lot of water. And that is where this whole issue of computer projections of more intense storms for the foreseeable future comes in. And in this warming, what is happening on our planet that life that lived in some place can't live there any longer? Well, on October 24th, scientists at the University of Colorado in Boulder reported that the average summer temperatures in the eastern Canadian Arctic are higher now than during any century, going back perhaps as long as 120,000 years ago. Right now, nothing has been like this perhaps for that long. 10 days later, on November 14th, there was a New York Times article by Jim Robbins headlined, "Moose Die-Off Alarm Scientists." Jim is a frequent contributor to the science section of the New York Times, and he's written for Smithsonian and Audubon and Vanity Fair, Scientific American, Discover, Psychology Today. He has investigated the persistent die-offs of many types of trees around the world that impact animals such as grizzly bears and moose. And this last year, he had a book published entitled "The Man Who Planted Trees, An Urgent Plan to Save the Planet." Now, Jim Robbins reports that something is changing so rapidly, and he assumes it is climate warming. The disappearing forests, along with an upsurge of winter ticks, brain worms, liver flukes, wolves, and heat stress, are killing Minnesota moose at such a rate that one herd has gone from 4,000 animals down to only 100 now and dropping. And this has happened in only 15 years. Earlier this year, scientists in the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources captured 49 newborn moose calves to fit them with GPS tracking collars, trying to figure out why so many moose are dying. The scientists were stunned when over half of those calves died within a few days. Many were eaten by wolves and black bears, but the cause of death in many other young is not understood. Too many adults and young are dying now to sustain the moose population. Beyond Minnesota, moose are declining in New Hampshire, Montana, and Wyoming. Some natural resource investigators warn it might be too late to stop all these moose deaths, signaling permanent environmental change that will keep evolving through the rest of the 21st century. Here now from Helena, Montana, is Jim Robbins.
Minnesota has the most dramatic problem. They had two herds of moose there in the 90s. One had 4,000 animals, and another part of the state, there were 8,000 animals. The 4,000 animal herd, there's now fewer than 100 of those animals left. And in the 8,000 animal herd, there's 3,000 animals left, and it's dropping at the rate of about 25% a year. People are out there hunting still, but they're not finding any moose. Something has changed. In fact, every one of the people that I've talked to who are experts in moose die-offs, something has changed, but nobody really knows what's changed. Everyone suspects that it's climate change. For example, in British Columbia, they had a moose wander into a Safeway store, starving, covered with ticks, and it was trying to eat flowers in the flower department at Safeway. And what they think happened in British Columbia to kill the moose was the pine bark beetle, which I've written a lot about. Pine bark beetles kill trees regularly around the United States, but as it's gotten warmer, they're killing a lot more trees. And British Columbia has been harder hit than anywhere in the world in terms of forest die-off. So all these trees have come down. The moose have no more cover, and they're wandering into places they've not been seen before. And on top of that, they're getting covered with ticks because it's getting so much warmer that these ticks are surviving through the winter, and there's a lot more of them.
What is the difference between a moose and a deer when it comes to fending off ticks?
Well, that's an interesting part of the scenario. In central New Hampshire, a lot of moose have died off. And the ones that they do have in the wintertime are covered with ticks, sometimes 100 to 150,000 ticks on each animal.
Yikes.
And it leads to something that they call a ghost moose, because the moose then try and scratch the ticks off. They scratch off their hair. They get hypothermic, and they have this kind of pale color because you can see their skin. And so they call them ghost moose. Plus warmer weather, that's made the ticks able to survive longer and to do more damage.
And in your New York Times article, you reference brain worms and liver flukes.
Both of those parasites live in a snail part of the time in the ground, part of their life cycle. And because it's more moist, because climate change causes more rain in some places, and Minnesota is one of those, and because it's more humid there, the number of snails are thriving, and so the number of brain worms and liver flukes are also soaring, and they think that's possible as one of the things that's killing the moose in Minnesota. Or it might be that plus the ticks. Wolves are a part of the picture.
And the wolves then, as the moose get weaker from all of these other pieces, the wolves can take them down more easily?
That's right. There's something called heat stress that's affecting moose. Again, what role it plays in all this is an unknown, but if it gets above 23 degrees in the wintertime, which it does quite regularly now, the moose start panting, and it's hard for them. They're covered in fat to get through harsh winters, and so it gets too hot. It's like wearing your down coat into the house. Pretty soon you want to take it off. Well, they can't take it off, and they start panting, and they're weakened, and the moose can't fend off the wolves. So what happens is, because winters are getting warmer, there's less snow in the winter, and so the moose, which cover themselves in fat when they begin eating in the fall to get through these cold winters, when it gets warm in the wintertime above 23 degrees Fahrenheit, the moose goes into heat stress. It starts panting, and it has trouble browsing, and it gets weak, and so its immune system is compromised. It may be more susceptible to parasites, but it's also more susceptible to predators. And, of course, that means wolves in a place like Minnesota. That's one of the things that seems to be killing them. It also reduces their immune function. Diseases have more of a foothold. And the coating of fat is also one of the problems with trying to define what's going on, because moose live out in the middle of the wild, and when they die, fat breaks down very quickly. And so when they go there to fetch the carcass has already been so degraded because of the fat that they can't do a necropsy and find out what killed them. So they're using this high-tech transmitter now that they feed to the moose, and when the moose's heart stops beating, it detects the heartbeat. And when the moose's heart stops beating, when it falls over, they get there within 24 hours in a helicopter or a truck, and they can get the carcass and get it to a lab as soon as possible.
So the moose are monitored now by scientists and the feds specifically to try to find out why they're dying.
Exactly. Yep. In Minnesota. Because a few more years and all of the moose in Minnesota could disappear. You know, I've written stories about the bristlecone pines dying all over the West. The oldest trees in the world are dying in the high country of California, Utah, Nevada. My forest of 200- and 300-year-old ponderosa pines died on my property. The white bark pines are dying across the West. Those are important grizzly bear food and important for other species. And I did a story on soil biodiversity a few weeks ago, and the woman there said, you know, we don't even know what's in the soil, let alone what's dying because it's getting warmer, but there could come a day when we can't grow wheat in Kansas anymore, because the organisms that are in that soil that allow wheat to thrive there may simply die because it's getting warmer.
Hmm.
I think what we're seeing is a popping of the rivets on the plane that we're riding in. And how many are popping and how many we're looking at and able to find. I think it's alarming, and I think that we need to kind of take a look at these problems and stop fighting about politics in Washington that are meaningless, really, compared to the life support systems around us in decline, and come together and find a way to restore and protect these systems.
Isn't it self-defeating that what is happening to changes in the Earth climate system has become so political that many people are afraid to even discuss it because they are afraid to be attacked when the warming of this planet now could end up causing more storm damage, more food drought, meaning that the problems could become even greater because of climate warming.
That's right. And we don't really know what those problems will be. I mean, let's face it, even now we're off the map. And scientists will say this. We don't know what's going to happen. We're beyond the collective wisdom of science up until now, because what's happening now is unprecedented. Not only because what's happening is unprecedented in terms of the climate warming, 7 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of the century, but because we've so altered these natural systems around us. But what happens when it's 3 degrees warmer?
What do you say to people who attack global warming with, there's evidence that the Earth is going to cool and maybe go into another ice age?
All of this stuff is really so huge and complex that nobody really knows what's going on. But you got to go with what you have the most evidence for. And right now the evidence seems to be that it's human-caused warming and it's going to get warmer and warmer.
Well, Jim, have you ever talked with a scientist specifically about this question? If winters become milder and milder, what does happen to insects that normally are controlled by ice and snow? And if there's no ice and snow, what's on the other side of warming climate when it comes to insects?
Right. That's one of the big problems. And at the same time, we're making the world safer for insects because we've reduced the length of winter. We're also destroying birds. I did a piece for a book I'm writing on an island in Guam where the brown tree snake got into an airplane probably and escaped on the island, and it's eaten all the songbirds. There's no songbirds there now. And the number of spiders and other insects is exponentially increased. It's really quite a nightmare to walk through the woods. There's spider webs everywhere and spiders and other bugs. And so that's the kind of scenario we're seeing as we make these kind of massive changes to the world. I've talked to people with Oxfam who've told me that in places like Peru, it's getting warmer and mosquitoes are moving up in elevation there to places where people have never seen mosquitoes and they're carrying malaria. They're getting malaria and they've never had to deal with it before.
Which means more diseases in places that have never had specific diseases before, and that to deny that the Earth is changing is actually jeopardizing the safety of humans as we go into the future if people don't face up to the realities of what exactly is occurring.
It's amazing. And it's like people are fiddling while the planet burns.
It has been politically dangerous for politicians to even warn or talk about climate change. And remember all of the controversy about using the words global warming. Well, right now, it seems to me that the weather, extremes of the weather, are beginning to take such great tolls on the economies of so many nations that it's being rubbed in our face that we are on a planet in which the climate is changing drastically.
Yeah, dramatically. I mean, I moved to Montana in 1978. We used to get 30 below zero temperatures 2 to 3 times a month in the wintertime. I don't remember the last time it was below zero. And that's why we have the problem here with bugs that we have. This is a crisis. Few people seem to recognize it.
Why do you think that there is such a climate of denial about climate change?
Too overwhelming for a lot of people to deal with. And they can't come to grips with it, so they deny it. And they blame the people who are talking about it as having a hidden agenda. I just think it's almost too much to process for a lot of people.
And climate change could be what breaks the back of our future.
It could be, or it could bring out the best in all of us as we get together and to try and adapt the world.
And I received an email just a little while ago from a viewer and listener in Wyoming who said, quote, I just wanted to let you know we are losing our moose herd here in Wyoming also. You may want to visit with the Wyoming Game and Fish Commission and discuss this with the state biologist. When I was a child, we enjoyed watching the moose. We even had many come to the town, Kemmerer, south in the southwest corner, in the winter. And they even would spend time in my yard and in my driveway. And now you are lucky if you ever see one. It's my understanding that they have been suffering from a blood disease that causes them to have stroke-like symptoms and eventually death. It has decimated the herds in western Wyoming to the point, I believe, that they are nearing extinction here. And so, as we end 2013, with so many massive storms in the last 12 months, and the computer modeling is projecting that there will be more and more intensity in the storms, and that we are seeing around us that the environment is changing so radically, so fast, and that something like the moose that have been in the north woods of Minnesota and in Canada for decades, centuries, would right now be going from 4,000 to 100 and dropping in 15 years.
Unbelievable. Extinction. Yeah. Jeez. Well, you know, Linda, and I bet it's happening all around the planet, even in different regions, isn't it?
And in the next half hour, I'm going to bring another, talk about warning bells all around us, that the planet is changing in a way that is so rapid now that when you hear politicians arguing about whether or not there is even global warming, and the data is all around us, and that it is affecting Earth's life in massive changes now, and that the mysteries every day, I must get, it seems to me, 20 stories a day now that are taking place somewhere in some hemisphere about the loss of, disappearance of, mysterious illness of, the increasing amounts of unidentified, say, diseases that might be linked to something that is happening because that there are insects and other kinds of bacteria or viruses that are being able to spread in places that they weren't before. And we've got less than 90 years left in this century. And when you consider the moose story and the story I'm going to talk about next on the monarch migration, and then another part of this, which is that there are increasing numbers of computer models that are saying without question that by the turn of New Year's Eve from the 21st century to the 22nd, there will not be an Amazon rainforest in Brazil. That it will be turned into something like the scrubby barrens of New Jersey.
Jeez.
I can't imagine what this planet will be like.
Do you know what that would do to the possibility of developing medicines and other things that are combating disease? The Amazon forest, Linda, that's where it's at. That's where
we
get
these kids. Well, it's called the lungs of the earth and the medicine chest of the earth. And we are living at a time where many people alive right now can be alive when it will be gone, and that is incomprehensible.
Somebody's going to empty out that medicine chest, and it's going to affect all of us. So what's new with you these days? Were you traveling? Any conferences?
I'm working on several really, really important investigations that, depending upon how they go, I will be able to share with the Coast audience in 2014.
Well, we will be ready for all of them, Linda. Plus, we'll come back with more on Coast to Coast AM.